Well, hello and welcome to this edition of My Car Guru. Today, we are going to be talking about the top 10 car maintenance mistakes that mechanics say, and they're the experts, do the most damage to your vehicle. Isn't that something worthy to talk about? We're also going to answer a question that I get a lot. Should I let my car warm up? You know, I've had some people say that they're worried that it's going to damage their car if they don't let it warm up. And there is some truth to that. At least there was, you know, back in the old and golden days, but it's less true now. And in fact, you can actually damage your engine if you let it sit there and warm up too long and damage a couple other things as well. So we'll get into that here in just a minute. I've been counseling with my brother. You know, he's the retired cardiologist. And one thing that he has more time to do now is nothing. And so what he does is he calls me more often. Now, you know, Wendell, if you're listening to this, there's no offense. I don't mind taking your calls and answering your many questions about technology and so forth. And one of them that he was asking me this time, what should he replace his iMac, that's his Apple device, big screen computer with? My recommendation was pretty straightforward, kind of probably surprising to him. I just love the iPad. I have an iPad, a 12.9-inch iPad Pro that I've had for about 3 or 4 years, and it just does everything I need to do except record this radio program. It is not good with that. I haven't figured out how to hook up this high-quality microphone to the iPad. So I have to use my iMac, which I have a 21-inch screen and a Focusrite preamp. You know what that is? I don't really know what it is either. But it does have a bunch of wires plugged into it, and I can change the volume, and it makes my voice sound better. If you ever listen to a podcast where somebody's kind of, you know, using the built-in microphone into their computer or iPad, it just sounds really thin. And that has a lot to do with the quality of the microphone. So I consulted the experts. How do I make my podcast and my radio commercials that I also record on this sound better? And so they recommended a certain mic and this Focusrite thing. And it works pretty good. So anyway, let's get on with the topic at hand. The top 10 car maintenance mistakes that mechanics say do the most damage. You know, they are the experts. And they're the ones that have to correct the errors that you have made. You know, what I've found is that when you look at the cost of maintenance in relationship to the cost of the repair that is the result of not maintaining your car properly, there is no comparison. You know, an oil filter and an oil change is a whole lot less than a new engine. I have actually seen people drive a vehicle for 30,000 miles and come in with an engine failure. And they admitted that they never changed their oil. They thought that their husband was doing it, or, you know, that the wife was doing it. There's always some kind of excuse. And then when you tell them what it's going to cost to replace their engine, then all of a sudden, I'm the bad guy. It's kind of, I guess it's normal to pick on the person who brings the bad news. But that's what happens. What do mechanics say? Well, it's pretty simple. Number one, putting off recommended and scheduled maintenance. You know, what maintenance do you go by? Do you go by what the dealer says, or do you go by what the manufacturer says? Well, if most people don't read their manual, so they have no clue what the manufacturer says, but really that's what you need to go by. A lot of the things that certain shops, I won't name them, recommend that you have done, like fuel injection cleanings and different types of flushes, brake system flush, that's a waste of money. Just go by the owner's manual. Just read what it says in there and go by that. Now, a couple exceptions. A lot of manufacturers say change the oil when the light comes on, when the change oil light comes on. That's because your computer has been paying attention to the different metrics on your engine and how it's performing, and it triggers the light when it decides that it's time to change your oil, or that it's time for you to change your oil. And sometimes that can be anywhere from 7,500 to 10,000 miles. That is just not what I like to do or recommend. Part of it's out of convenience, though, because I can remember 5,000 miles better than I can remember 7,500, and it makes me nervous. Just, you know, I get to maybe 7,500 miles, and I just keep looking at that light, waiting for it to come on. And what if it comes on in the middle of a big trip? Well, I don't want to go to some strange dealership and get my oil changed. I'd rather do it at Gateway. So I change my oil every 5,000 miles and rotate my tires every 5,000 miles at the same time. So, you know, then I know that I'm doing what my car really needs to have done. And plus, I'm going to a place, my dealership or a typical new car dealership, where they're using a checklist of items, all the key things that they need to check to make sure everything's getting changed when it needs to. But number one reason that vehicles fail is because not following the maintenance schedule. Number two, ignoring the check engine light. Now, sometimes it looks just like a little wrench that comes on. Sometimes it says service engine soon, or it can just say check engine. That could be a little disconcerting to somebody that's going down the road. You know, you're halfway between Spartanburg and Columbia, and that light pops on. And you check engine? What does that mean, darling? I don't know. We better pull the manual and look at it. And it means that one of your emission controls has basically set off that light. Could be that the last time you put gas in your vehicle that you forgot to tighten down your gas cap. That's the number one cause of the check engine light coming on, is if you do not tighten your gas cap down properly. So always check that first before you go to the dealership. But don't ignore this light. One of the main reasons is that, I'll just give you an example. One of the main things that turns on a check engine light is a faulty oxygen sensor. Now, it could be that the oxygen sensor, that's hard for me to say for some, oxygen sensor is perfectly fine. You could have a dirty air filter, which is a $20 repair. Now, if the O2 sensor is really bad, it's $250 to fix it on average. But if you don't check it and you let it go, then it could cause the vehicle to misfire and eventually result in the need for an expensive catalytic converter replacement. That is over $1,000. Okay, see how this little maintenance thing can make a little bit of difference in your... In other words, it can escalate badly if you just don't take care of the problem up front. So, pay attention to the check engine light and get it checked out. And don't go to, you know, one of the little parts stores and say, hey, would you tell me what my trouble code is, you know, in my car? Because what it does when the check engine light fires off, it stores a code or a series of codes in your computer. And so they just plug into this little port that's right underneath your steering wheel. It's called the OBD2 port, Onboard Diagnostics, version 2. And they plug into that and it gives them codes. And they say, well, it looks like your O2 sensor's bad. Well, it may not be. You know, it may just be a stopped up air filter. It may be something minor, maybe a loose wire. But if that's what happens when you go to just an auto parts store or some, you know, mechanic shop that doesn't really know what they're talking about, and there's a bunch of them. And so they end up tinkering on your car and replacing a bunch of parts at your expense, experimenting basically. And then you get all frustrated and say, well, I'm just going to go back to the dealership. Well, you've already spent all that money, and then we come in to the picture and say, this is what it really is. And then you get mad at us because we tell you what it's really going to take to fix it. Don't get mad. Just let's get it fixed. You know, if we replace a part at my dealership, I don't know about, can't speak for everybody, but if we replace a part on your car and it does not fix the problem, then we will give you your money back. That's just the way we do it. If we make a misdiagnosis, that's on us. If an auto parts store makes a misdiagnosis, that's on you for trusting them. So what's another big mistake that mechanics say do the most damage? Number three, well, we already talked about that, not changing the oil or not having it changed on time. Okay, so we don't need to talk about that anymore. You know, tires are expensive. And number four is the number one reason why tires wear out prematurely, and that's not checking your air pressure. Now, a bad alignment situation, yes, that can cause your front tires to wear out prematurely. But air pressure is so important. If you have too much air in your tire, folks, it's going to wear in the center of the tire faster than it does on the outside. If you have too little air in your tire, it's going to wear on the outside edges, but it's going to wear evenly on the outside edges. Should that make you feel better? No. because you just need to check your air pressures. You will lose 2 pounds per month unless you use nitrogen, pure nitrogen in your tires, and then you're still going to lose some. It might be a half a pound or a pound of pressure, PSI, pounds per square inch. So check it. If you're worried about it, get nitrogen. Maybe that'll make a little bit of a difference anyway. Okay, neglecting coolant, brake, transmission, or other fluids. All this stuff matters. I've got a 280Z, 1978 280Z, and it's got a leak. It was keeping on the showroom floor all the time. It's a beautiful car. One of my listeners sold it to me. Thank you very much. But it's developed a leak. Didn't leak when I first got it. It was fine. It sat there on the showroom floor in the Nissan side for, a year, basically. And then all of a sudden, drip, drip. That's what happens when vehicles sit. It's not, if I were driving the vehicle every day, I'm pretty sure it would not be leaking still. But the gaskets just deteriorate. And this is the rear main oil seal, apparently. So what do I have to do? Pull the transmission out so that we can get to the rear main oil seal and replace the rear main seal. Now, how much is that seal? $15. Labor to do that, probably, if you were having to pay for it, $400 or $500. Pretty expensive just for not driving the car. So drive your cars, and we'll take our first break, and I'll be back here in just a second with the rest of this list. And if you just tuned in, this is Lenny Lawson, the Car Guru, talking about the mistakes that mechanics say do the most damage to people's cars. It's basically because they're not maintaining their vehicles the way they should. They've never cracked their owner's manual. When I say that, you have no idea how many cars that we look at when we're trying to trade for something, and we open the glove box and see if all the paperwork's in there. Among a lot of other things, it's surprising what you'll find in people's glove boxes. Anyway, the owner's manual is still wrapped in the plastic that it came in from the factory. They've never bothered to look at it. At least look at the easy reference or the quick reference guide. At least look at that so that you know the basics. But I'd recommend that you get a good little lesson underneath the hood with your technician or your favorite technician or your salesperson if he knows what he's talking about. And find out where the dipstick is and where the battery is. A lot of people don't even know where their battery is. They try to jump start their car and shoot, the battery's mounted in the trunk and they can't find it. You know, they're out there in the dark with a flashlight, and the people that have the jumper cables have no clue where your battery is either. So again, it's just so important to know your car. Know a little bit anyway. Yeah, but you definitely don't want to neglect your coolant, your brake fluids, your transmission. There's so many different fluids going on there. And when they leak out of different places on your driveway. And when you see red, on your driveway, well, it's probably the transmission. And if your transmission's leaking, it might just be a gasket, which is like $15 plus, $100 worth of labor maybe. A new transmission, $7,000. So, big difference. Okay, what else? Continuing to drive when the vehicle is overheating. As I've mentioned before, folks, you cannot see your instruments on your car if your whole instrumentation is covered with pictures of your children and grandchildren. That's not what that area is for. I know you love them. I know you want to keep the pictures, keep them in mind and everything, but you can survive. Put them in your glove box or something. Keep them in your billfold. You got all kinds of pictures on your phone. You don't need them covering your temperature gauge on your car. That exact same thing happened to very good friends of mine who are elderly, and they had their dash all covered up. Beautiful pictures, but it was covered up, and they couldn't see their car overheating, and they destroyed their engine. Simple blown head gasket. If they'd seen the gauge going up into the red, they could have pulled over, stopped, turned it off, and saved the engine. Still would have probably had to replace the head gasket. But, it's $800 as opposed to $6,000 or $7,000. So make sure you don't drive the car when it's overheating. Another little tip, if you know what antifreeze smells like, it's kind of a sweet smell. If you raise your hood after you've been driving the car and you smell that sweet smell, that's not good. You've got a leak somewhere. you need to go to your dealership and say, I have got, I can smell antifreeze in my car. Well, can you see it leaking anywhere? No, I don't see it leaking. I can smell it. Would you please look for a leak? And it's important that they catch that. You know, it could be the beginning of a blown head gasket, so you don't want that to happen. Number seven, not changing fuel and air filters. You know, fuel systems, you know, these very high-pressure fuel pumps, fuel injector pumps and stuff like that, very sensitive to any kind of dirt, just the minutest, the most minuscule little piece of dirt can get in there and wreak havoc. You know, replacing one injector is bad enough, but when you have to replace a high-pressure fuel pump or all of your injectors for some reason, then we're talking ruining Christmas if something like that happens. So change your fuel filters and air filters as well. You know, engines just, they like to breathe. They got to have air. They got to have air and fuel and spark. And so if they have those three things, and a little bit of compression doesn't hurt, and if you have those things, then you can, an engine can run good. But if the air flow gets cut off, then you're going to be using more fuel and terrible gas mileage. So just change your air filter. That's all you got to do. You know, sometimes the service advisor will, you know, take the air filter out and show it to you. And it's got a bunch of bugs in it and things like that. I've actually heard people say, nah, go ahead, just put it back in. A lot of times it's a budget thing, I get that. But that's a mistake. You need to keep the filters clean because your car will get better gas mileage and will last longer if you just change it. Unfortunately, there are some unscrupulous folks out there that have filters that are all clogged up, and they bring it to you, and that's not even your filter. It's why you should be able to check your own air filter. You know, if you know where that is, it's really different than what it used to be. You know, back in the 70s, you had this big breather on top, and it had one little butterfly screw on top. Take it off, pull the cap off or the cover off, and you could see the filter. Pull it out, and you could look at it, and you know if it's clean, you put it back in there and seal it up. It's not that way anymore. These are in air boxes and they're hidden from view, and you have to, you know, maybe take a couple screws out or pop a couple clips open and to get to that filter. But it's not rocket science. I mean, if you can bake a cake, you can check your air filter. I can't bake a cake, but I can check my air filter. So, you know, you can cross train that way. I'm just hoping that you have a good shop that you can count on, that they're really taking care of your car. You know, if you've had a bunch of issues with them and had to take your car back for repeat repairs, and you know, you just you don't get that warm fuzzy. They don't know who you are when you go in the door. You know, they act like they've never seen you before, and you've been in there 10 times. Might be time to think about going someplace else, don't you think? And if they're just unqualified, you know, to work on your vehicle, if they're just, you know, they could be a pretty impressive tire store, but just look at their shop. I mean, are they nasty? Are there just tools and their tool benches look all nasty and it's just not organized? And that's not really a good sign. That doesn't mean that they're not good techs. But, you know, it could be an indicator that you might be doing business with an unprofessional, unqualified shop. I'm not judging. I'm just giving you my opinion. Number nine, using inferior or incorrect parts for your vehicle. Always use OEM, that's original equipment manufactured parts, for your vehicle, especially while it's under warranty. Do not put an aftermarket filter, which would be what you would get if you go to any fast lube place, do not put that on your engine, and unless you're out of warranty. Now, if you feel okay out of warranty and you want to put on some other off-brand filter, fine. And just because it says Fram on it, or it says, I don't know, some other brand, I can't think of one right now, doesn't mean it's their top quality. Go with OEM. Carry a couple filters in your, if you want to go to the Jiffy Lube place because it's convenient, fine. Just carry some filters with you that are the correct filters for your vehicle. Go to the parts department at the dealership, buy them, put them in your trunk, and just remember they're back there next time you get your oil changed. At least do that for me, okay? Use the proper brake pads. Use, in fact, OEM brake pads too, because if you use aftermarket pads, many times they're just going to squeal and squeak. I don't think they're going to stop as good. And of course, there's some people out there saying, now, Lanny, the same manufacturer manufactures those things. Maybe so. You don't know that. You know, they, some of them could be made in the United States and others somewhere else. So I'm going to use what comes in the box that says Motorcraft for my Ford. If I'm going to put it on my Toyota, it's going to, I don't have a Toyota right now, but if I did, it's going to say Toyota on it, on the box. That makes me feel good. And I think that's what the engineers that design the vehicle want you to put on it. Okay, I'll get to the last one here right after this break. Okay, I'm back. You know, I wish you didn't need a computer to work on cars, but you do. If you don't have the right software, if you don't have the right connections, if you don't have the right knowledge, you're going to mess around and you're going to screw something up. And that's why they have factory-trained technicians. Now, you may have a factory-trained technician working at an independent shop. More than likely, they got their start working at a car dealership. And they just figured out that they can make more money going out on their own. You know, a really good shop foreman is as important in a service department as a tech, but almost as important, because they're the ones that have the most experience and they tell the other techs what to do. They help make decisions on whether somebody needs to go ahead with this repair or go the cheaper route, use OEM parts, use aftermarket parts. If you find a shop that has a good shop foreman, then that's a plus in your favor. But how do you know? Well, you know because you do business with places consistently. You know, you buy your car at the Honda store, you go back to the Honda store to get it worked on. You get to know the service advisor, the service manager. And all of that is just so important to do. Now, let's get to the question of the day. The second question of the day. Should you let your car warm up? No. Yes, you should. But only for 1 minute maximum. If you let your car sit out there and run, then it could be doing damage to the car. Because what happens when a car is cold and you fire it up, there is a really rich fuel mixture that's going into the combustion chamber. And what that does, if that stays rich for too long, then it degrades the ability of the oil to protect the cylinder wall. And I have a 2005 Porsche 911, and the Porsche tech said, Lenny, don't ever let that thing warm up for very long. I said, why? He said, because they have this problem that can develop called piston slap. And it means that the walls, or bore score, I think is what he called it. And bore score means that the cylinder walls are getting scratched because there's not enough oil protection there. So you got to watch out for that. Another thing is that you would probably be damaging the environment because your car pollutes a lot more when it sits there and runs and it's at idle than it does. Does that make you tree huggers feel better? I thought it would. Okay, well, thanks for listening to this edition of My Car Guru. And if you need me for any reason, give me a call, 423-552-2020, or send me a text, or send me an email to mycarguru2020@gmail.com. Well, thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.